getting techie.
We got Shams with us from Dell. Hello, welcome back.
Hello, how
You've
are you
You've been traveling.
Doing? Yes, extensively.
Where have you
Always.
Been?
Always. When I left the show, I was going to Nigeria. And when I was coming into the show, I had just come back from Egypt. So I was in Egypt only a few days ago. Beautiful
Egypt.
Cairo.
Egypt has just gone on to my bucket list.
Is it really?
I've just felt this urge to see the pyramids. I know they've been there a while.
Yes.
But you know when you just feel
I just thought you'd already done that.
No, I haven't.
No.
I haven't.
Oh, yeah, you must do. You
and
must
I think
do.
It's after going to Angkor Wat. Now I'm really interested in history and I want to see it all.
Yeah, well, I think you ought to. It's, you know, I mean, it's still, a lot of people say like that approach up to the pyramids is a little bit of a anti-climax, but I don't know. Once you see them for the first time, it takes you
breath. It is. If you just visit them from the outside, it is very much anti-climax. So make sure you try to get yourself into the whole, can I tour inside or not? Now, I say that, and the truth be told, with all my visits to Cairo, I have not.
You haven't done it. Why?
Seriously.
The first time I went, I got scared by other people, where they said it is risky. You could get into a lot of trouble. And second, I just didn't have the time. So
I really want to go. I also watched, there was this brilliant series that did in the UK called Tutankhamun, and it was all about the guy who eventually managed to find the tomb. And yes, it just really made me want to go all of a sudden.
So you've suddenly become very exploratory, haven't you, since that trip? You know, you're you really are turning into
Marco Polo.
Yeah.
I'm the history one now on the show. That's me.
There you go.
Who loves the old stuff.
Have you visited the other seven wonders of the world?
No.
Add them all to your bucket list.
I know, they'll be on there. The others are further away, though, aren't they? Than the pyramids.
Yes.
That's got to be first, I think. It's closest.
Yes, yes.
So you love your traveling, Shams, but you also love your tech, working for
Dell. I love my tech, and recently I was reading something very interesting about the next era of human-machine partnerships.
This is a marriage, is it? Let's just make that clear.
Exactly. It is a marriage, but a lot of people have looked at this marriage with doom and gloom. And, you know, we're at the dawn of what we call the Internet of Everything, which already is having a dramatic impact on the way we live and the way we work and the way we tech and travel. But really, this study is looking and thinking past the dawn. What will the relationship between technology and society look like in the future? And in an effort to really answer this question, at Dell Technologies, we've partnered with the Institute for the Future to find out. And we asked them to explore a bunch of technologies like AI, robotics, VR, and stuff that we've really talked about and what it might look like. So that's what I want to talk about.
So when you talk about Institute for the Future,
yeah,
am I right in thinking that they have offices at Emirates Towers?
That I'm not aware about.
Ah, okay. Maybe it's a completely different thing.
Let's look it up.
That's where they're building the Museum of the Future, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
I saw that the other day.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know there are.
You'll definitely be visiting that, I know.
Yeah.
There's historian.
When you go into Emirates Towers now, it's very open. It's really cool, actually. It looks like one of those really, like Google, like a social working space. And you don't know what's offices and what's just cafes that you can pop into nowadays. But I think they've got a lot of people in there working on the future.
Yeah.
Emirates Towers, you're right. I mean, I don't know if they have ITFT, IFTF in there, but definitely a great office. It really represents the stuff that, you know, Dubai is trying to do, which is become the pioneers of the future, which is also why I thought this topic was really interesting.
So how would we define our relationship with technology now? Let's just put it in perspective what we're doing
today.
That's
a good question. Let's set the context of today, right? I mean, I think today is the era which is really setting up. I know a lot of people hear that technology is evolving the way we live and work and do everything in our lives. So we've kind of gotten bored of this statement. We've heard it for decades now. But truth be told, and I always say this to my customers and my team and everybody, there has never been a time where this has been more critical and more relevant. It's not the same. It might be just that we can put the words together and it sounds the same thing. It's not. Never before has technology been as involved in our lives, as critical to our businesses, where business is technology and technology is business. And also in our homes, right? Now our toasters and our clothes and our cars and everything talks to the internet through digital technology.
My clothes don't talk to the internet yet.
They will soon.
Will they?
I'm sure that cardigan you're wearing has had a few conversations.
What will they say? Need a wash. Actually, do you know what? I'm lying. I'm completely lying. Right outside of my apartment door, I have this black box and it's called My Box. Yeah. And it's a laundry thing. And it's amazing that it's outside my front door.
Like, what does it do?
So you go out there, Mark, and you put your number in. You got to set up like a password and whatever. And then you say laundry. So you click the button and it will say, do you have any instructions? And I'll be like, just what the label says. And then it says, open locker 3. So it opens, you put it in. The next day, it's in there clean.
Really? Yeah. But think beyond that. Maybe if with just a little chip on the clothes, the machine would automatically be able to tell you that you have put the wrong set of clothes in here and color is going to spill. So think about that. Or, hey, you messed up and you put the wrong material. This needs cold water. That needs warm water, you know. And maybe they could even design clothes that can tell you how frequently you need to wash it. So this is...
We know that, though, don't we?
We do, but I know where Steph is going to go with this. And the point here is, in this study, and what I want to talk about is how technology really is not, the good news is it's not all doom and gloom, not by a far cry. The study really highlights how technology is there not to take over. It's there to help us.
This is where I want to step in with, is it there to help us or is it there to mollycoddle us? Because people who are mollycoddled, you'll know yourself, if you meet someone who's grown up with everything in life and someone walking around after them just picking stuff off as they drop it, they are not the best people. So do we want to become those people who don't actually have to do anything for ourselves because technology's thinking about it? Who are we going to be?
I've always said this in this show. The people who are being mollycoddled, there were people who were being mollycoddled before technology existed in the 18th century. And then when we introduced the steam engines and so forth and technology, the industrial revolution and everything, okay, they were being mollycoddled by all of that good stuff. And now technology's come along and people are suddenly getting on the case of technology that it's going to turn everybody into mollycoddled. That's not the case. People who are getting mollycoddled are going to get mollycoddled regardless. I wonder if anybody's ever used mollycoddled that many times in a sentence before.
Yeah, what does it mean?
It starts to sound wrong, doesn't it, after a while?
Can we have an explanation as to what it means? I'm sure some of our listeners have never heard it before.
I don't want to say it, but I don't exactly know the definition, but I kind of got it.
Pampered or spoiled?
Spoiled.
Yeah. Spoiled, pampered.
So don't blame technology for possibly spoiling people extensively. There's going to be people who are going to be able to effectively and efficiently use technology to benefit them, help them evolve faster, improve faster, become more efficient. And there's undeniably going to be people who are not going to be able to...
Who's Peter?
Exactly. It's undeniably going to be Peter. Who are not going to be able to effectively utilize technology and become pampered and mollycoddled. But the good news is that, you know, this particular study forecasts that emerging technologies, really supported by a whole bunch of good stuff, is going to help society enter a new phase, or what I'm saying is an inflection point in its relationship with machines. These will be characterized by even greater efficiency and possibility than ever before, helping humans transcend their limitations. Right? The thresholds that might exist today, where we as humans will become what we're calling digital conductors, using technology as an extension to better direct and manage daily activities. Here's the most interesting one, where we believe with this inflection point, this evolution, by 2030, this next era, we will be in a place where work will chase people rather than the other way around. Now, what does that mean? So we want to dive deeper into that. And basically, it'll be a place where people will be learning in the moment, as the pace of change will be so rapid that new industries will be created and new skills will be required to survive. So the skill of being able to learn or acquire knowledge will become more important than the knowledge itself. So
I have thought that, actually, because it's more useful for you to be able to know how to Google the answer to a question than know the answer to the question these days.
Right.
We'll come back. We'll dive more into this study when we do. And don't worry, stay with us if you, like me, have just started using the calendar on your computer. It's going to be fine.
And I'm intrigued as to what goes on behind that black box of Steph's outside her
apartment.
Sorry? Your little black
laundry box.
I'm going to find out more about that.
There we go. Getting techie.
Getting techie. We got Shams with us from Dell. He joins us every fortnight to talk tech and a bit of travel as well. Now, we were just talking before the break there about digital conductors, us becoming digital conductors, which to me is you saying very soon you're just going to be a vessel.
No, not at all. In 2030.
A vessel for tech.
No. In 2030.
We're going to become the phone.
The phone. We're going to become the robots.
We're going to have that many chips implanted in us. We're not going to know which way to turn, are we?
It scares me.
I know.
Doesn't it? But that's not the case. In 2030, what we believe is that we'll rely upon machines to manage even more aspects of our personal lives, and will effectively become the digital conductors that we were calling or labeling this. This does not mean that you start becoming the, what is it called, the cyborg. What it means is that technology will function as an extension of ourselves, helping us better direct and manage our daily activities at work, in our lives, at travel. Let's look at travel, for example.
But has anyone thought maybe we're good now? You know, like maybe we don't need it to be even more effective than it is. We've got our calendars online. We can invite people to meetings. They can say send response now.
Got Facebook.
Does it need to be better?
I think so. So imagine if tech, and let's look at travel. So imagine a world where everyone has an AI assistant that goes beyond what assistants can do today, where people are connected by VR, virtual reality, allowing them to connect with people remotely in a truly immersive environment and experience, where we have drones that can take care of quickly picking up, delivering, and moving deliveries and items in any object. So on one side, there is less traveling involved because the tech is improving our ability to connect remotely. But on the other side, this efficiency gives us more time to choose our own travel experiences. And in fact, gathering for us the best destinations, itineraries, as well as, you know, ways to get there. So I can imagine that my avatar, my AI, would understand my personal preferences and habits. And because it has the ability to churn and analyze data better than me, it would be able to recommend better ways for my vacation. I might know that I want to go to the pyramids, but it might know my food habits. It might know my, you know, history, sudden new, fancy. It might know that I also like the beach, and it will find for me exactly the right ways to get there. It'll find me the right tour guides. It'll look at the ratings. It'll take care of all of that. You know, as we get more data available and software becomes more intelligent to be able to make decisions that are almost human, then basically it will be able to allow us to extend ourselves so that we can do more. Right. There will be always the person that can be pampered and mollycoddled and become lazy. But that's got nothing to do with technology. That's a human's nature. But for the most part, people are going to be able to use this technology to help them become more effective, more efficient in general. There's no mention here where anything is going to be implanted within the human being.
Okay. I would like this, actually, because I remember being in Poland driving through the countryside. We were doing like maybe 7 hours a day of driving.
Yeah.
And you would drive for hours and not see anything. And it would get to lunchtime and you'd think to yourself, oh, wouldn't it be amazing if there was like a hidden gem of a restaurant that was in a barn somewhere that you went in and it was Michelin star chefs, but how would you ever know about it?
Yeah, so avatar.
It would be great if you just had a thing on your phone that you open and you said, I am here, and you didn't necessarily need the internet or Wi-Fi connection to do it. And it said, right, we know you love really great little hidden food restaurant type places. Here are the ones within a 100-mile
perimeter. Exactly.
That would be awesome. That's right, the kind of technology I want to help me.
Right.
But I feel like that's the kind of technology that who's going to pay for it? Someone has to earn money out of this, right? For me to be able to use it.
Brilliant. And one of the things in the report that is highlighted is one of the key enablers in allowing all of this to happen, which is now slowly starting to happen today, but by 2030 we see that it's going to become sort of very prevalent, is that technology is getting smaller, faster, and cheaper. Those are the three key trends, right? And it's not going to be about trying to cater to a select group of people. The real opportunity is in the long tail, in being able to allow the masses to be able to effectively utilize this. So that technology becoming smaller, faster, and cheaper, becoming more available to everybody is going to become crucial. These three things predominantly are going to be most effective not only when people can effectively utilize machines, but more importantly, when machines can talk to each other. That's when all of that ability for a machine to say, I know what my person needs, and I know that there's a machine somewhere else in that tour agency, in a restaurant, and also that drone, and I can talk to all of these. So the person doesn't need to work on the heavy lifting to figure all this logic out, right? But
when you say faster, smaller, cheaper, are you talking about things like PCs, laptops, telephones?
PCs, laptops, telephones, until maybe imagine a world where you don't even need telephones. right?
Oh, can't imagine that. Can you, Mark?
Exactly.
That's well ahead, is that one?
We are talking about 2030. And it's not that difficult to understand. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that a lot of companies, for example, Facebook, is experimenting with. A world where you just don't need telephones, right? When you have virtual reality headsets, then you basically don't need to be, you know, getting on a call with somebody. You can just sort of ping somebody and say, I need to be able to meet you, literally. And you could be sitting in China and the other person could be sitting in the US. Let me look at another example that really sets the scene here in regards to what we think is not possible, but is so close to our grasp right now. Today, at an increasing portion of human mobility needs are being met by apps. These are not the actual solutions for travel. These are software that are basically building the solutions for you. And from a travel perspective, here's an extreme picture, but not one that is too hard to imagine. Soon, it will be very hard to justify keeping a car in a garage, or traveling to a site for a two-day workshop, or maintaining a piece of equipment that's rarely used. Right now, I read so many reports about the excessive growth of vehicles on the road and transportation bodies and governing bodies trying to solve this problem with different modes of transport. But this thing is going to flip on its head because of technology, and because of technology becoming faster, smaller, cheaper, and more pervasive. Not the car itself, but the technology immersed within the car, and the technology within the roads, and the technology within our house, knowing our schedule, linked to our calendars, being able to say, this is when my, you know, person needs a car. The car is going to become available. It's going to be Uber to the power of, you know, or Kareem to the power of Kareem and Uber.
Put together.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, it scares me. Yeah. It scares me because I feel like with that comes expectations of you having to be somewhere at a certain time.
Yeah, I won't have to think anymore. My brain will shrink.
That's
my worry. It probably couldn't shrink.
Yeah, you know.
Getting techie.
Now, with all these folded wires and little pieces of tech, Shams joins us once again. I mean, how you fold them wires is pretty unbelievable, isn't it? It's like when you get it out of the packet, isn't it, when you first bought it?
Yeah.
You
know, mine never looks like that
again, ever. Connecting cable.
No, mine have to look like that.
They do?
Yeah, just for the listeners, we have my wires all tangled up literally in three segments, right? So
you'd hate my rucksack. Like, I went in the other day and I pulled out the plug for the laptop, and interwoven between it was the phone charger and the headphones. You know, the little skinny wire of the headphones. It was wrapped around everything about 10 times.
When today's segment is over, I'm going to show you how I wire my headphones and these cables so that they, A, never tangle, and B, the moment you unwrap it, it just opens up.
I can't wait.
There's a way. It's a kind of
can
way.
Can we do
it
now? I'm so excited for this. I don't need to, because all you do, Shams, is you just hold the big bundle in the air and you shake it really hard, and then they all just fall apart.
No, it doesn't work for me. It never works. And then what I do is I rip the cord apart and, you know, all...
Your kids are going to have so much fun with you as they grow up. So much fun just driving you crazy with wires and stuff. It's going to be amazing.
They're already doing that. See, back at home, I have my bedside table. I already told you about the Nespresso machine and the dates bowl and everything. And I have a power extension cord set up. Similar to this, I have the cables all jacked in with exactly one slot open on the power extension cord. All the cables are plugged in with nice little stickers and stuff so that, you know, this is my phone, that's my other iPad and stuff. And every time I come to bed, it never fails. Every time I come to bed, the power extension cord is turned off. It's a power extension cord going to a wall. There is another open socket next to it. Why are you turning this off?
Whatever child that is, I love them.
I bet they're hunted down.
Yeah. Amazing. So we're talking about technology today. And travel. And we're talking about a new study that you found. Tell us a bit about the study.
The study is actually, it's very interesting. We, did the study at Dell Technologies, partnered with the Institute for the Future to find out what will the relationship between technology and society look like in the future. And, you know, we've often been exposed to two extreme perspectives about machines in the future. One extreme, an anxiety-driven issue of technological unemployment, and the other, extreme, the over-optimistic view that technology will cure all our social and environmental ills. This study focuses, the study's focus is on what the new relationship between technology and people could look like and how we can prepare accordingly. So if we engage in empowering human-machine partnerships to succeed, it really will impact on society and it will enrich us all.
I wonder if we're going to get to a point, though, where people decide not to run with some stuff. Because, you know, all the new technology as it comes in, we all seem to pick it up and run with it, don't we? And go, oh, yeah, that's great.
Love it, love it.
Yeah. Mm. Even if it takes some of us longer to get onto it than others, we all seem to get onto it in the end. But will that continue happening? Or will there be a point where we'll just go, do you know what? I'm actually all right. I've got my telly that connects to the internet. I don't need it to do much more than that. I don't need it to disappear completely and just be holograms in the room. Yeah. Like, I'm fine the way it is.
Yeah. It's all going to depend on whether technology is going to continue being efficient and useful and effective for us. Look, let's not deny the fact that there are many Kickstarter campaign that comes out, or you know, in innovations that are launched that fall by the wayside. For every Facebook that we've seen successful, we've seen a MySpace, we've seen all these other platforms that have come out that have failed, right? And that's just one solution within that's looking at two examples within one kind of solution, social media. But there are so many different technology innovations that are launched and that basically fail. So the ones that do succeed are the ones that the community does believe is useful and is helpful. The good news is that technology itself, IT itself, is becoming, as I said, faster, cheaper, and also much more available to the consumer and smaller as well.
Do you think we'll see a world ever where Wi-Fi is just free wherever we go and we're connected constantly?
I think our region is a great example. When you look at the Middle East and in Dubai, for example, there's so many places where you have free Wi-Fi already. So I don't think that's a do I think. I think that's already available. When you look at the Smart City Initiative and the Ministry of Happiness and its objectives, these two things literally depend on each other, and one grows the other, so to speak, because people want to be able to use technology to do more. So what we're seeing is that towards people's happiness, this initiative of Smart City is going to become crucial. I love the fact that when you go to D1L, you basically, first of all, can do everything so fast, so easy, and it gives you a beautiful dashboard. You know, did I know that I needed that information? I did not. But now when I pay my D1L bill, it tells me exactly my trend of how I'm wasting or spending electricity, right? And then it also tells me when you do go ahead and pay the bill, it asks, was the experience good for you? I wasn't even going to say useful. Were you just happy? Three faces. And all of
I
this
just
really
did it the other
together.
Day, actually. And I did do a happy face because it was very easy. But I'm worried about you, Mark, because I heard something the other day saying that you can't go in. You're not going to be able to go in the future.
Oh,
is that right?
No, oh, no. I still go in. And into the same DWA office that I've been going all these years. Pay, they know me. Oh, it's the guy with the hair, the guy off the radio. Have a little bit of a chat, bit of banter. How's it going? You know, it's a bit heavy this month, isn't it? But, they never knock anybody. But I have that human conversation,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
It's not all about smiley faces for me yet. And I'm wondering if that was going to be... Is it because I'm older than you? When you get older, do you have less of an appetite for technology?
I don't think it's got something to do with age. We have so many studies out there that highlight people who are much older are adapting technology. I mean, they can't travel. So now imagine how virtual reality is going to allow them to still be able to carry out the rest of their bucket list, for example,
yeah, that's
right?
Cool.
Or they are old people who are still living alone at home and their families might have to have found work remotely somewhere else. Now technology really allows us to be able to monitor our aging parents and elderly and be able to actually automatically distribute medicine or medical aid immediately when a situation or incident happens, right? Drones and all of these beautiful technologies allow us to be able to do that. I want to leverage the banking example that you were talking about earlier and maybe connect it to the example about you walking in and really enjoying that. Do you know how much... I was talking to a CIO of a bank who happens to also be responsible for the finance of the business. And he was talking to me, do you know how much it costs me for all of these beautiful branches that I've set up? Every person that ever visits my branch, do you know what the transaction cost is per person?
How much?
$5.
It's not a lot.
I said, yeah, okay, whatever. Then he said, now, I have taken the time over the last couple of years to build these beautiful branches, but suddenly I want to get rid of them. It brings me back to your ATM example. And he said, do you know what the transaction cost is per person online? 5 cents.
Wow. Yeah, it's so different.
And here's the point. I remember the days, and this was not too far back, where I would have a 15-minute break. I would run down from my office, you know, in Dubai Internet City, down to the Emirates Towers, is that what's called, Business Central Towers, and I would, you know, go to the bank and get my money yeah. or pay whatever I need to, and come back in 30 minutes. And my team will ask me, "Where were you?" And I'll say, "I just went out to get some money." And they'd say, "And you did that in 30 minutes? Wow, that's fast." And I know today, this is literally just 5-6 years later, I will be sitting on my phone. And if I see the little scroll bar on that banking app when I'm trying to make a international transaction, 15 seconds, and I'm upset. This is taking too long, right?
I know, but I do worry about this need for us all to do things so much faster, because really, there are only so many things I want to do in a day, right? Like, I do want a good work-life balance in life. I don't want to be like running at a million miles an hour all day, every day, so I can ramp, like, get as much work in as I can. That's not healthy for anyone. Like, you want that walk to the bank and to come back in half an hour. For me, that's lovely. I'd put my iPod in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, those yeah. moments of just being on your own and doing the little jobs yeah. you have to do, I would miss it.
But, Steph, I think it's a matter of perspective, because what you're not diving in deeper to look at the granularity of it. The walk to the bank is a task that I need to do to get money or move money from somewhere to another.
Yeah.
But if I look at myself, I do have my moments where every morning I do go out for my walk or my run, right? So that I haven't lost that. But now I have the ability, because technology is allowing me to do things faster and in a certain segment of my time and be more efficient. Devices and machines are allowing me to better organize and take care of some of these tasks for me. What I'm able to do is better focus on making that quality time even more quality.
Okay.
You get
yeah.
my point?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, if we want to go for a long walk, we don't want to go to a long walk thinking, oh my God, what happens when I get to the bank and there's going to be a queue and that person who always talks to me nicely is not going to be there. It's going to be the other guy, because I know they went on yeah. vacation.
Guy with the funny hair is going to be ahead of me in the queue.
Exactly. You know, oh my God, that ATM machine might be broken, you know.
But you know, one of my first jobs, I had to go to the post office. In my first job, I had to take the post to the post office and I had to stand in the queue. And I feel like I learned a lot from just standing in the queue. Like, there are things in life that you have to do that are bothersome and annoying, but I feel like that builds your character as a person, the fact that you had to do them. Like, if everything is easy, I don't think I would be the same person.
A couple yeah. of messages can't come in here. Alex texts in, you can already do most of these things, talks in the program, using the Internet of Things, smart contracts, different apps available. They're just somewhat high technical entry requirements right now. And also...
that's what you're saying, isn't it? It's going to come to yeah. the masses.
Yes. I mean, the person who commented that, Alex, right? I mean, yeah. that's a great point. He's just reiterating what we've said and building on what Alex said. To be able to... this is why I call it an inflection point. Right now, these things are already available. But as they get, as the report also highlights, as our report highlights, as they get smaller, faster, and cheaper, they will become more powerful between each other, machines between machines, to be able to talk to each other, generating more capabilities for them to be able to be available to the masses and be more useful in general for the citizenship and the community in large.
Getting techie.
We got Shams with us from Dell this afternoon. Shams, we've been talking about this all afternoon, but let's get to what you think is going to be completely different with your crystal ball by 2030.
There's so much already that we've talked about, but let me talk specifics about things that I think, are elements in our lives which are really totally going to flip on their heads. I think phones, for example. We've already seen phones change so much from the little bricks that we know to the smartphones, but I think it's got, by 2030, so much more change to go. I think cars.
No, wait. So phones.
What kind of change?
The phone as we know it is not going to need to exist. Because when we start doing virtual reality, when we start doing more immersive usage of AIs and assistants.
So what do you see replacing it? Glasses, or even further than that, contact lenses?
Further than that, no. Assistants. Digital assistants. You won't need to actually have a communication with somebody. The digital assistant will be able to anticipate and take care of the communication for you. And not even just over email, but between two digital assistants.
But what if it's with your dad, just to ask if everything's all right at home?
Yes, then even better. You can do it over virtual headsets and virtual reality.
But am I going to be wearing that headset all the time? I need you to really dumb this down for me.
No, you don't need to be wearing it all the time. Are you on the phone all the time?
No, so the headset, the phone is going to be replaced by a headset that I would put on.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, that's one example. Now think about this, cars. I mentioned this earlier, but as technology becomes more efficient and effective and data becomes more available and software, so much of all of this stuff comes together, let's forget the technicalities of it, and decisions will be more fine-tuned. Suddenly, people are not going to need cars. Imagine the model of Uber without the need for you to actually request a car. The car becomes available the moment you need it, right? And it becomes more cheaper and it becomes more efficient, right? Suddenly, we don't need to be buying cars, right? With cars don't need to be staying in people's garages.
So like a car will just show up and it belongs to everybody.
Exactly.
But they're such a statement, aren't they, cars? People use them as statements about their personality. Like, people are really funny about their cars. Yeah. Not me.
Yeah, just like people used to use castles as statements in way back when.
Nice dig. But the Kia Picanto, like, I can't see ever wanting to... Although, if I did have a car on tap that was just outside whenever I needed it, yeah, you're right, I wouldn't want the car.
But check this out. As I said, the more data we get on ourselves and available to this digital assistant, the more you won't need to worry about the kinds of things that you're thinking about. The AI, the digital assistant, will know that this person doesn't like a Picanto, or this person doesn't care, and this person has a status requirement. So they're only going to get the kinds of cars that they want, right? Imagine all the cars in all our garages suddenly becoming available in a pool. That is where we can imagine 2030 possibly going towards.
I can't see the car manufacturers wanting that to happen, because that's less people buying cars.
I'm pretty sure that the taxi industry did not imagine that an IT company is going to become the biggest taxi provider in the world. And yet look at what's happening and what's driving it predominantly. Let's remember, because what I want to say is that the car manufacturers are not the point in this. It's the consumer. It's the customer. It's the citizenship, right? And citizenship does want that. Imagine how much more greener that option that I highlighted is going to be.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right? So
and
another
there'll be
example.
Less traffic on the roads.
Yeah. Another example is education. Education, I believe, by 2030, we're already seeing it happen, is going to completely flip on its head. As technology and software allows the classroom to become more cascaded and proliferated outside in the world, and as we become more effective with data science to measure and carry out assessments, I think what's going to happen is classrooms and class time is going to be where people do homework, and lectures are going to be basically done at homes. So the classroom is going to completely flip on itself, right? That's another thing that you can imagine by 2030 that will happen.
I can't wait to see how education changes through the years, can't you?
But think about that industry. That is an industry that hasn't changed in centuries.
Yeah.
And nothing has asked it to, or nothing has allowed it to. And today, technology is forcing that industry to completely change its nature and models and methods and even its objectives. And that says something about what technology can do in industries. Right?
That is fascinating to me, because most of the jobs that the kids who are in school now, little school, the jobs they're going to do probably don't even exist yet. You know, when we were growing up, it was, what do you want to be?
Postman.
A vet, a doctor. Like, they were the standard jobs.
In the future, I mean, this is one of the things that our report really highlights. It highlights how, I've already mentioned this, I'm going to say this again. In the future, it's not going to be about the knowledge that you have, but your ability to acquire knowledge, right? And that in itself is easy to say, but it's so hard to imagine that our world. Imagine the impact that that has on the nature of education. Imagine the impact that that has on the nature of talent, how you source talent. Imagine the nature of jobs, in the future as well. So,
kind of glad I'm not little.
I know.
Anymore.
I've passed it all now.
And travel-wise, just quickly, before we let you go, travel's going to change, and we're going to travel less for some certain aspects, like work.
I think, I don't want to call it less or more. What I want to say is that travel is going to become more about you know, a perfect balance of what we want to be able to do. For example, there's a lot of times where I'm traveling for work to be able to do a two-day workshop. It is extremely important for me to be able to do that. And I'm glad to be able to do it. And I think the business understands how it's very important. But what I will also say is that if I could immerse myself and my customers or my team members in the digital environment with virtual reality, is that travel really needed? Imagine from a cost perspective, from a environment perspective, from all of the, from a health perspective, and also time saving perspective. And now what can I do with that time saved? Then I can go and travel. I mean, Dubai is a great example. It is the hub and the center for great destinations, right? But am I visiting these destinations to be a tourist, to enjoy it like you are talking about, to be able to go and see the pyramids? Or am I just going constantly for work, 2 days here, 2 days there? I think travel is also going to flip on its head. I think we're about to wrap up.
Yeah.
And what I want to say is that check out more details on DellTechnologies.com. Just search for Realizing 2030 with Dell Technologies, and you'll find a lot more that will intrigue you about the ways of the future in 2030.
How old are you going to be in 2030?
How far away is it?
It is 13 years away.
Don't make us do mental maths
right now. I'm just working this out, and I'm going to...
48.
I want to know if I'm going to need to care.
Yeah.
48.
21, 45, 50, might be 50.
70,
50, 70. 55,
oh,
no.
You're going to so need to care.
I'll be in my 70s. Anyway, Shams, we'll catch you in a couple of weeks.
Yes.